Studio 360.
Celle-là.
Je l'ai vue aussi.
Après celui-là, le migrant.
You want me to say how much I love Agnès as a mic test? Agnès, I love you. I've always loved you. Even in 1800, when I was not born and even conceived, I was already thinking of you.
You are a clever man. Yeah, sometimes. Alors.
You're so important.
Listen to that. Is that baloney I can say?
You can say baloney. That's allowed.
It can be hard to get a word in edgewise when the filmmaker Agnès Varda and the photo artist JR are settling down in your studio. Agnès Varda is a founding filmmaker of the French New Wave and made classic movies like Cléo from 5 to 7 and One Sings, the Other Doesn't. This year, she'll be getting an honorary Oscar. Although she's the first to acknowledge she never achieved big celebrity or box office.
I never got commercial success. I'm still in the border, you know. I decided myself, I am a princess in the border of cinema.
And JR, he is widely known for plastering his gigantic black and white photos all over the built world. So he's a photographer, a maker of public art?
I call myself an artist. I don't like street artists. I paste a lot, so would I call myself a wallpaper man?
Yeah, you're a civil servant.
Exactly. Yeah.
These two internationally celebrated French artists came together to collaborate on a new documentary, Faces, Places. They're an unlikely pair. She is 89, he is 34. In the movie, the two of them drive to villages and towns all over France, talking to locals and making portraits of those people, and then blowing up the pictures to monumental scale and pasting them on the sides of factories and barns and houses and trains. It's a fascinating, inspiring, completely charming road trip. So how did these two get together? Agnès's daughter set them up on a kind of play date a couple of years ago.
It's crazy that we knew about each other's works for so long, but we actually never met. So I just came to Agnès's house and studio thinking, wow, I have the chance to visit her studio and I'll be there maybe 1 hour and it's amazing.
You took some photos of
with
me.
My phone, but then I told you, you should come to my studio if you can. I'd be delighted to have you, which you did the exact next day.
Huh?
And I took photos of him.
And you know, the crazy thing is when she came to my studio the next day, she spent the entire afternoon, and then after we said we should meet again tomorrow. And when we met the next day, so the third day, we actually said, okay, let's do something. And we started walking that day.
We really thought we could put together our two ways of looking at people. Mm-hmm. And I've done documentaries. So because I give big importance to the people I meet, try to give them the opportunity to express themselves, to be bigger than life, you know. And that's what he does with his images, you know. He has done huge images of people. It's a way of recognizing the value of people.
Right.
Especially people who are not supposed to be in the light. So we had that in common, I think.
Well, we have curiosity together. We're both big curious people. But there's something really important that many people don't know. We love chouquette, you know, and chocolate éclair.
That's an important part?
That's an important part because we ate more chouquettes and éclair than we actually film in this, you know, because we brainstorm so much.
Well, it's what we call a sugar mouth.
Yeah? So you that was part of the equipment? You just had giant crates of eclairs?
Yeah, and also meeting peacefully around the table, after or before eating. But the table is a nice place to speak. And putting up ideas, if we wear this, if we went there, and then I know a village. He said, oh, I know another place. We started to make a list of places we like, and that started like this.
But we have a common thing is we're really independent in the way we walk. And on that, we got along really well because we don't work with sponsors. We don't work with brands. We want to be completely free to create the way we want.
Right. So how long did this take from beginning to end?
I would say a year and a half.
Yeah, we started in July 2015. Yeah,
2015. 2015.
Ah, 2015.
Yeah, but yes. It's okay. What was the world in 2015, Agnès?
But it lasted 18 months, shooting 1 week a month.
Oh, really?
Not more than that.
I mean, we would eat chouquette the rest of the month, but really film that.
No, we had to think about where to go next.
Right.
And in the village we went, we tried to have their point of view on what we did and helping us to do it.
But also Agnès wanted me to get out of cities where I found, you know, the most amazing walls. She wanted to take me into
little towns,
and that was a great thing.
Get out of the city, come with me.
Well, that one of the beauties of this film is not only your relationship and your obvious love for each other and all that, but this kind of back and forth humor. It's a great road trip, you know. It's like a Strange Bedfellows.
We are allowed to be humorous about ourselves. But when we film the people,
right,
we respect them terribly.
Absolutely.
We will never make jokes about them, especially when they are different. They don't know exactly what they feel about what we do. And there is a scene I love really in the harbor with the docker worker.
Right. Well, explain the project. It's dock workers and you're making giant pictures of their wives.
That's a place that I've worked with all the dockers of this, I think the biggest port in France called Le Havre.
Bah, je voulais t'amener ici parce que c'est avec ces gars-là, Christophe, Denis, David.
So I wanted to take Agnes there, and she keeps saying, no, this is a big city.
Right, it's the one non-village part of the...
Well,
but it is, in a way.
They decided it's far from the city. They decided it could be taken as a village.
Counted as a village, yeah.
In kind of a village, because it's a very closed world that, you know, you can't enter like this. And I wanted to take Agnes. And of course, when she arrived, she was like, wait, there's only men here? Which is true. There's not a single woman walking in the docks.
Oh. Well, I always have a feminist approach to things.
To everything.
And I thought, not to everything. I'm a feminist. Let's put it that way. And so when I was in that world of even very, comment dit, viril.
Yeah, the
very virile men. Yeah. No, they're
all... Men-ish, like...
And I said, what about their wives? And it's interesting.
Oh, so you had the whole idea of bringing their wives.
Yeah.
Oh, I went to meet them, even out of JR.
Because that's why she's alone with them.
And then what I was impressed is that when you work on something... You slightly make the people change. When the man said, it pushes the borders, it pushes the cliché. What we did with their wives made them think. I really believed something happened.
So you took these beautiful black and white portraits, head to toe, of the dock workers' wives, then blew them up to like 100 feet tall and pasted those images on the sides of the shipping containers stacked on the docks.
Yes, exactly, which we... The heart of every single woman open, so the door of the container would be open at the level of their heart.
Which was beautiful. So about two-thirds of the way up these stacked containers, one shipping container in each image of each woman was open, and she, the subject of that photo, was inside, sitting inside her own heart, so to speak.
Which was very high. Very high.
No,
we had
terrifying.
To take crane to
really?
Take them up there. Yeah,
and the one
course.
Who said she was scared, I felt that.
Oh, yeah.
But the men were touched.
Touched why, do you think? Because you brought their wives into this manly workplace?
Whatever we do, we try to just get to the deep feeling of people. And I really believe the men had something that changed by our common action and by the fact that their wife suddenly were so big.
And the stars.
And the stars of the story.
Yeah.
So we enjoyed it because we had the feeling it was not useless.
JR, you have been in the news lately in this country for this project you're doing on the U.S.-Mexican border. Can you describe it for people who haven't come across it on Instagram, as I do all the time?
Beautiful subject.
I dream about walls, and that's true because, you know, I'm always pasting on walls. Now, I dream also about borders because, you know, often they are walls. And that's why one of my earliest projects in the Middle East were on the separation wall, security fence between Israel and Palestine. And when I started hearing a lot about the wall in the news,
the wall
between... You
the
know,
proposed wall, the fence that exists now.
Exactly, between U.S. and Mexico. You know, that already exists, you know, since like 2007, I think, or something like that. I wanted to go there and scout it, and I saw that the fence, you know, had see-through. So I imagine someone looking over the wall. Now, the first door I knocked at, because the house was very close from the wall on the Mexican side, the woman opened and told me that she was following me on Instagram or Facebook. I don't remember.
That's crazy.
I was like, wait, are you sure? And then she's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure. And then I said, wait, can we check? Because I'm sure you got it wrong. And then you know, she really knew my work. So she was like, you can paste on the side of my house if you want. And I'm like, oh, I'm actually looking to do something a bit bigger. And then that whole time, there was this little kid in his crib looking at me. And he was, you know, just 1 year old and looking at me and then also looking at the wall because they live right by it. And then I left. And then when I was driving to Tijuana on the way, I was like, wait, that's the kid. That's the kid that I should photograph. That should be looking over the wall because I don't know what he's thinking. I don't know what his political views are. He's 1 year old. He don't even know what's a fence. And so I came back, photographed him and installed him, I think 60 foot something high, so three times the size of the wall, looking over the wall like a giant sculpture.
It's beautiful.
It's an extraordinary image. It's like one of those movies where somebody gets blown up to be giant size. It's this little, beautiful little baby boy.
And if you look perfectly, the hands are touching exactly the wall. So there's only one position to look at it from, and where the hands hits perfectly the wall. So for all the people that came and visited when it was up, they would actually look at it and try to find the angle to take the photo. And often you would have a border patrol car passing or someone walking, and that's what the little kid is looking over.
It's great. And the kid is happy, he's curious, he's looking around, which gives it this lovely, charming aspect. It's not like disturbing until you sort of spend some time thinking about it.
You have to think it over.
Yeah.
That's proposal. It's neutral enough that you have to make up your mind.
But very true.
He's making
whatever you say.
He's making fun of her, ladies and gentlemen.
Normally I say amen to whatever she says.
No, I'm trying to understand your work.
Oh, thank you.
But
you're right. I mean, you say it in a great way. Can I film you? You're beautiful.
And now you're filming her with your iPhone.
Always. She used to not let me film her. And look at her now. She's giving...
At the beginning, it got on my nerves.
When he would do this?
Yeah. But I cannot fight every day.
That's why you win on the long term, trust me.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, you just keep at it.
Yeah.
Next, I want to talk about one of Agnes's films that really seems to foreshadow her work with you, JR.
Yes, Murmure.
Which is all about murals in Los Angeles. Came out in 1980, a few years before you were born.
Exactly. And when I found Murmure, I was so impressed because the way she looked at them, the way she looked at how they interact with the city, and it's so contemporary. When I look at it now, I'm like, this is what we should...
From 38 years
ago.
Yeah.
I don't know. It speaks to me in a huge way, of course, because I do murals, but it also inspired me to work on new murals.
Really?
And to
it
go
really
back.
Affected your work?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
When you made Murmures, Agnes, it's somewhat about the human stories behind the muralists, right? Why did you make that?
The point is that people need, and don't always have the opportunity, to express themselves. And so these people were expressing themselves on the wall. Some artists were against the gallery system, and they thought they should do art for free for the people. And so they did beautiful murals. They made things that sometimes disappeared. And then also, there were no respect. So sometimes the neighbor would put just white on the wall. There was no idea that it was art.
Right.
It was natural, popular art. And I was so impressed by what I saw.
And now, 30-something years later, you are collaborating with another muralist, this guy. So here is an image of one of JR's murals from his Wrinkles of the City series, which features portraits of old people pasted onto old buildings in cities around the world. Will you describe this image, Agnes?
On a wall, on a big wall, there is that woman, Chinese woman, looking up. We don't know if she's mad or if she smiles, which I love. The way the wall is placed. Behind her, huge skyscrapers, is that the word?
Yes.
The gratte-ciel, skyscraper. So the humanity of that face with the series of buildings, we know that people live in it, but it looks like stones. So it's like stones in which people live and one face. And one face is always a miracle for me.
And her face is, 50 feet tall, I guess, something like that.
Do I describe it well, Monsieur Bugier?
Oui, Madame Vardin. It was in Shanghai, and it was part of a series called Wrinkles of the City, which actually was the first thing Agnes showed me when I came to her house and say, you will like me because I saw you like wrinkles in this project, and look at my hands. I have so many for you.
It's not wrinkle. I decided it's a landscape.
There you go.
With rivers,
well, I think of the landscape as wrinkles.
Fields, different fields, dark fields, and some woods.
Ah. Agnes, your great, gorgeous breakthrough film was Cléo from 5 to 7, which came out in 1962. We've got a clip we're going to play. It's in French, and maybe you, JR, can tell us what's happening in the scene as it plays.
Yes, sure. So that's, we're looking at Cléo right now in the street of Paris. You know, one of the things also I have to say on a personal level, why I love those films and this film particularly, it depicts Paris in a way that doesn't exist anymore.
Really, just from 1961, yeah.
Yeah. And
we are in a coffee shop.
Yeah.
Right.
And also, and that's where she learned that she's being ill.
Just learned that she's sick.
She has
and
cancer.
She's expecting, well, she's expecting the results.
Right. She doesn't know.
That's why the time is so sharp. The story of Cléo is a personal story about how that woman is full of fear. And it becomes a personal story, very pathetic in a way, because being afraid of dying, you know, is a terrible theme, especially for that beautiful woman.
Yes, I so highly recommend this film. I saw it in a college film course when I was in college. I went back and watched it. It's a great movie. And as you're saying, just seeing circa 1960 Paris, yeah. It's like, whoa, young people, go watch this film.
But the thing is that at that time, I had in mind, especially not only to tell her story, but to tell it in a real time. The film starts at 5 and ends at 6:30. And minute after minute, we follow her. We never leave
right.
her. So I gave myself what you call the contrainte,
hard constraint.
Right.
So to oblige myself to believe that the time is mechanical, you know, you cannot change it. I don't know how long we have spoken, you know, etc. But there is a subjective time
right.
that we feel. Sometimes it goes fast. Sometimes we don't understand what happened. So I was trying to have the feelings expressed in that frame.
It's so modern in so many ways, like the constraint of the real time, the hour and a half, the fact that it's all about this one woman dealing with this terror of dying. It's an extraordinary movie. So,
thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I was looking back at the coverage of you in the New York Times back then, and in the early 1970s, there was an article in the New York Times about all female film directors, and it said, almost none have achieved prominence anywhere in the world, only Leni Riefenstahl and Agnès Varda, and one other female filmmaker were named. So did it feel that I have to work twice as hard to...
No. It felt that I called all the women... Get up, get out of your kitchen, learn to be technician, learn the sound, learn the screenplay, learn everything, you know. And little by little, they came into the field of cinema, not only as directors.
Right.
But in France, we are the champion of women directors. We have hundreds. And here, it's slow.
Right.
You have stars like Kathleen Bigelow and some, you know, famous ones. But mostly, we have more women working.
Yeah.
And they do sound and they do mixing. And they do director of photography.
Right. But as you say, it is a slow process of change. Agnes and JR, I just want to say once more how much I love this new film, Faces, Places. And such a great advertisement for France. The government should pay for everybody on earth to see it. It's just so completely charming.
You know, everybody told us, it's charming, it's lovely. It gets on my nerves because it's a serious documentary. It doesn't have to be sociologic attitude. We want to smile. We want to enjoy life. In the time, we do our work, giving power to the people we meet, giving them light, enlarging their faces, make them be more important. That was our work. I don't like that to be totally hidden behind the couple, the so-called funny couple we are.
Well, but also it's unlike many important documentaries. There's nothing depressing or disturbing about it.
No, but you can smile, you can cry, you can laugh. There's a lot of that in there.
Yeah,
we're always surprised. The first time we screened the film, we're like, wait, people are laughing, and then it's like, oh, I'm mad at this. We didn't make a funny movie. I'm like, let it happen. And yes, if they laugh, it was not supposed to be a joke. But if they find it funny,
they cry also.
Yeah,
a lot of people said
I choked up a lot. Definitely.
So it's just getting something which is in life, totally contrasted feelings, wherever you go.
Well, I'm happy this date was arranged. which is to say you were introduced and that you made this film and that you came here. Agnes Varda, JR, this has been such a wonderful pleasure. Thank you. Agnes Varda and JR's film, Faces Places, is screening now in some cities and is rolling out across America. Go see it.
Merci, Kurt.
Thank you.
De rien, Agnes.